Our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and we are going to get Popo in. Just heard from him, and I understand he was quote unquote off the grid, as we say, and he said he's just killing it when it came to the Colonial action yesterday. Bunch of winners off of Form to Win. So we'll see if we can't get some help from Form to Win. And there's also some exciting updates from both AmWager and Form to Win when we talk to Popo after Andy later. Andy's going to join us as soon as we reach Gage Holmes. And this is a nice story. I'm I'm a sucker for I'm a sucker for this kind of story. Rider and been basically taking calls in the afternoon, I think since January, and gets a stake win. It did not take her long to bust through and get her first career win. I think I remember reading that she got her first win, her shaving cream and baby powder dousing in her third career mount. She's up to 29 wins now, and when you look at her profile at Equibase, it now says stakes winning jockey. Gage Holmes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm terrific, and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You've got a fabulous story and an interesting story because you didn't grow up in a horsey family, and you end up, going off to school and, some animal equine interests. But it feels like the racetrack has been calling you for a while. Bring everybody to the start.
Horses have just always been something I've been interested in, from a very young age, watching movies like Seabiscuit and Secretariat and Racing Stripes and all of those. It was something I always wanted to do. I never really got an opportunity to work with horses at a young age. My neighbor had horses, and I would go down to her place and just do some trail riding growing up, and that was kind of the extent of my exposure until I went to college. And from there, I started grooming at the racetrack while I was getting my degree from Penn State to see if it was, you know, something I was really wanted to pursue. And it ended up being something I fell in love with and kind of just carried on from there.
Hey, you grew up at Erie?
Near Erie. It was a town called Pleasantville. It's like an hour southeast-ish away from there. So I commuted.
you were sort of between, it's closer to Erie than to State College, but that's a bit of a no man's land from State College, right?
I live in the middle of nowhere is where I live.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. And then when you, in terms of studying at Penn State, your degree officially is in animal science or?
Called veterinary and biomedical science. It's very similar to animal science. Yeah. But I figured, you know, when I decide to retire from racing, it'll give me, you know, just a step, you know, to help me out, get me started in the real world, I guess you can say.
What experience had you had even just, you know, pleasure riding and getting on horses at all before starting to groom, and then, you know, what got in your head to think, I want to learn how to, you know, really ride?
Well, I always wanted to ride. I took a handful of lessons when I was in, you know, probably around the ages of 8 to 12. It's pretty expensive to take riding lessons, though. My parents, you know, couldn't really afford it, so I would just do some trail riding with my neighbor's horses. And then when I went to Penn State, they had a riding team there, and I auditioned, or tried out, I guess you could say, and I made the team, so I got to take weekly lessons with them, and that really helped me because I didn't really have much formal riding instruction before that. It was, you know, just hang on and have fun. So that gave me, you know, I guess a good stepping stone to start before I started getting on thoroughbreds.
How quickly in the learning curve and in the development curve as a rider did you think and realize I could exercise ride? And then I guess it's a pretty short jump from getting on in the morning to getting on in the afternoon.
Oh, I wish it was a short jump. To be honest, I feel like it's a huge jump. It was such a difference because when I started learning to ride in the mornings, you know, I had a lot of doubts going into it because, you know, oh my gosh, am I really going to make it? You know, these people, most of them have been doing this their whole lives, and here I am at 22 just learning how to really ride. So, but I had a lot of really, really good instructors and people and mentors and whatnot that really helped me get to where I am. So, I mean, without them, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But I'm very thankful for everybody that took the time to bring me along and coach me to get me ready to ride.
Name some names. Who did you sit down and watch film of? Who took you aside and you know showed you certain things in terms of your seat and so forth and handling the stick, etc.
Oh my gosh, so many. So I started in Ocala, and I started with a trainer named Mike Cook at Classic Mile, and he put me on, you know, some of my first race horses, and he had some exercise riders there that would, you know, help me out. And from there, I say I got a really big base under me when I went to Ian Wilkes in Kentucky, because those were older racehorses, not just babies, you know, and a lot of his riders and assistants and whatnot would just give me little pointers, because I was there for about 2 years. And that's where I got, you know, a lot of the bulk of my experience. And from there, I went to John Ortiz. I worked for him for last summer. And he was funny. He would take videos and pictures of me and, like, draw over me and, like, fix my form and whatnot. And I spent a lot of time on the exerciser to perfect my stick work. I'm still working on that. But some jockeys that would help me, junior, down at when I was started at Gulfstream this winter, junior and Emma Jane would take time out of their days and really help me, you know, with a lot of the finer points of riding. Chantel, too. So, you know, it's just almost everybody I've come across, honestly. I could stay here all day and name all the people that have helped me.
That's really nice. What has been the most challenging aspect, both on the back of horses and then either on the business side or the personal side?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think, honestly, learning from the ground up, like having very little experience in another discipline, in some ways helped me because I was a blank slate, you know? So when people taught me things, it wasn't like contradictory to something I had learned before. So I think that was maybe a positive as when it comes to riding. But personally, the biggest thing I had to overcome was I'm naturally a very introverted, kind of quiet, shy, to myself person. And when you ride racehorses, you can't really be that way. You have to be very social. You have to put yourself out there. You have to, quote, sell yourself in a way. Because, you know, trainers want to ride jockeys who can come back and, you know, can be social with the owners and, you know, good to the health and whatnot. So that was probably the biggest thing that I had to overcome and work on, was being a little more extroverted and putting myself out there.
Interesting. You mentioned your parents earlier. How has this early portion of your adult life, the decision making, how did it go over at home?
You know, everyone in my family has been really, really supportive of my career choices. They've kind of always said, you know, as long as you're happy and doing something that you enjoy, then you're winning at life. You know, so they're happy that I'm doing what I love to do, and I get to travel and do it at the same time, especially now while I'm young, you know, getting to see a bunch of different places and ride horses. I couldn't ask for more.
I love it. In terms of the business end, because we'll start to talk a little bit about, you know, what you're doing, you know, day to day, because you've got rides every day, and you know, whether it's the weekend at Ellis or then you know, during the early part of the week, you know, the Monday through Thursday portion at Indianapolis. I mean, you're riding 7 days a week, essentially. How did you approach getting an agent? Explain to people, you know, that are listening that you know, are hoping to duplicate what you've done.
Well, to start, when I started my riding career in Florida this past winter, I did not have an agent. I freelanced in the morning at Palmetto's because there's so many trainers down there, Palmetto's and Gulfstream, for the winter, you know. And I wanted to just get on as many horses as I could. That was my game plan, you know, just get on as many horses as I could and get as much experience as I could down there while my apprenticeship hadn't started yet. But as the winter went on and I had to start looking towards, okay, do I want to get serious this summer? Do I want to wait and maybe start my bugs next year? Because, you know, when you win your fifth race, you know, your year starts ticking. When I was deciding where I was going to go, I contacted John, which is the guy I used to work for. I was like, you know, here's some of my riding videos. What do you think I should do? Should I go back to the drawing board? And he's like, no, they're looking good. I want to help you. I want to help you get started. You know, if you want to come up here, I can talk to some of my friends. And he's good friends with Jimmy McNerney, who's my agent, talked to him about taking my book. And it just kind of worked out.
Amazing. Well, after getting going in the winter, and we should mention, you won with only your third. I saw a Dave Joseph note that you had won with your third career mount.
Oh, it was ninth. My ninth mount, I believe.
Ninth mount. Okay. I thought I saw third.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, yeah, my ninth mount. I was galloping for a man named Gerald Brooks in Florida who was putting me on.
Jerry Brooks, sure.
A number of his horses. Yeah.
Well, you're in a good, you're in, obviously, and frankly, when you look at who you ride for, you're riding for, you know, top barns, and obviously they, you know, they like what you do and how you do it. So that gets us to Jeff Mulcahy and Henrietta Topham, and looking ahead or looking back at the weekend on Sunday, and in fact, as it happens, Henrietta Topham had also been considered for a start today in an allowance race. How much of the behind-the-scenes decision-making, you know, were you aware of about running in the stake rather than running today?
You know, I am completely out of the decision-making process. My agent is, I trust him with all of that. He's very sharp when it comes to all that kind of stuff, and I know he is in good contact with, you know, with the owners and trainers, and you know, I leave that all up to them. I just ride where I'm told to ride and when I'm told to ride. So knowing that filly, I'm sure they just wanted to get her in a race that was on the turf, you know, depending on what race may or may not have come off. I'm sure that's what their thought process was.
Well, you end up on Sunday, and talk about the win.
Oh my gosh! I'm on cloud nine with it, because I create kind of a list of goals. I've had them for a long time since I started galloping, of things I would like to accomplish in this sport before I retire, and winning a stake was definitely up there among some of my greater aspirations. And I'm just so thankful for Jeff Mulcahy and his entire team for keeping me on, for naming me on in the first place, and for everything they've done to get the filly ready and have her in such great form for Sunday. It was just a dream come true.
It goes off a little under 10-1, and you came from well back.
Yeah, that filly, she's really cool. Her first two races at Indiana that she won back-to-back were such different races. Her maiden race was similar to that one. She came from off of it. And her second win in an allowance, she broke and led from gate to wire, so... You know, we knew going into this race, no matter where we ended up coming, starting off, that she'd put in a bid, she'd at least try. So that kind of took the pressure off of me when it came to the break, you know. Like, you know, wherever she settles, I know she's going to make an effort from there. And it happened to work out.
She, you know, she's lightly raced and is now suddenly won three straight. And this was a serious field for those that you know, were tied up with Del Mar or with Saratoga on Sunday. You had the favorite at 3-2 was Turner Luce, who you know, of course, from this winter, winning the Rachel Alexandra at a big number, and having participated. This was her first start since running in the Kentucky Oaks. So Turner Luce favored. Take Charge Roe was in here for Brian Lynch. The very nice Wildwoods Beauty, multiple stake winner. I mean, this was a very nice group of fillies and mares going the mile. And in terms of your style, and in terms of, you know, the way races unfold, Gage, what do you feel like you've got a certain way that you like to approach a race, or do you feel that you're versatile enough to, you know, essentially, you know, ride the whatever the horse has got for you, long, short, turf, dirt?
I think it really comes down to the horses. You know, I know her. I know that particular horse's style. And you know, she tells you when she's ready to run. So I was just kind of counting on her to let me know when she was ready, and she did. But when it comes to other races, I do a lot of what I like to call homework. I study the horses' races, how, like, what did they do when they ran well, what might have happened when they didn't run so well. And I try to you know, apply that style that the horse seems to, or has at least shown that they've liked in the past.
Well, what's amazing, when you look at this, you look at Henrietta Topham, and basically she was 0 for 3 previously. Now she's won 3 straight with you, and of course you had the 7-pound allowance that you're carrying, and she won wire to wire last time, that allowance race, going a mile and a 16th, and yet she won from well off the pace in the maiden breaker to start her 4-year-old season. She's an interesting and, frankly, kind of an emerging horse.
She really is, and she's very versatile, which I think is the coolest part about her. You know, she's okay wherever she is in the field, and she's just such a cool horse.
Henrietta Topham, and you know, we're talking to Gage Holmes. In her first year riding, basically, you know, has got a built-in career in animal bio systems and bio studies when she's finished riding. But right now, she's in the midst of a very successful rookie campaign. She's going to turn up on people's apprentice eclipse ballot. You talk about some of your goals and aspirations. What else is on that list?
You know, actually, I checked off another thing on my list today, which was being named on a full card. Which,
wow,
obviously one is gonna scratch because that was Henrietta Topham. But so yeah, that was another one of my goals. I would like to win a graded stakes as well. And, you know, a lot of my goals I've already accomplished. I do want to ride at Kentucky Downs. That's on my list, ride and win a race at Kentucky Downs. I accomplished riding and winning a race at Ellis already. So, you know, it's just a lot of little goals like that. I'd have to look at my paper. I have them all written down in a notebook. But those are just a few off the top of my head.
I love it. I love it. Gage Holmes, and really a sweet story from the weekend. Sunday at Ellis, not only did Gage win her first stake, but Jeff Mulcahy as well. And he's clearly
and
got himself
owner.
The owner too? Was the first stake win for the owner?
Yeah. So it was a first for
great.
All of us.
That's great. Cambus Kenneth Farm. This is a homebred of theirs. And actually, boy, you want to talk about a veteran pedigree. She is out of a Cozine mare and by Lemon Drop Kid. So we'll have to look up this family.
She's bred wonderfully.
Yeah, she is. And she's a bay. That's interesting. Instead of any gray from Cozine. But This is a emerging 4-year-old filly that looks like she's got even more upside. Has turned the corner. She didn't debut until September of her 3-year-old year, and actually she did not run badly in those races at Indy and Turfway. But now that that she got a little bit of a winter break and came back running, breaks her maiden, first start at 4. Clears an allowance condition, second start, and is now a stake winner. So there's a lot of things going right with Henrietta Topham and with Jeff Mulcahy and with Gage Holmes.
Yeah, we're excited. It's going to be interesting to see where we head next, possibly Kentucky Downs, and So I'm really excited. You know, we got a hopefully a bright future ahead of us.
Have you mentioned your family? Have they had chances to? Did they come down to Florida this winter and watch you a few times, or have they been out to Kentucky?
They did not they didn't come to Florida. I did go home, and the week that we were off here at Indiana, I rode a couple at Presque Isle, and I won one up there riding for Trombetta, a horse I believe is named Molise. So that was really cool. So they could come see that, and I think they're planning to come down in the fall and see me ride a few races down here then.
Really nice. Wow. This is what's the dog's name?
Oh, Rembrandt. He's an Australian Shepherd Border Collie mix.
I love it. Rembrandt the dog. All right. Gage, this was really fun. And for those that, you know, have been seeing your name and, you know, knowing that you're an apprentice, a lot to be said with the confidence shown by everybody involved here, Jeff Mulcahy and the owners, Cambus Kenneth, and letting you ride the stake on Sunday. And they're paid off handsomely. Watch for Gage at both Ellis and at Indy at Horseshoe. And she's riding, as I mentioned, John Ortiz, of course, who she worked for. But everybody's using her. John Horan and Gennaro Garcia, Norm Cash. Then over at Ellis, you're riding for Michelle Elliott, and you name it. You obviously have got the eye, and you've got the confidence of a lot of top trainers. George Leonard's using you as well. Anna Maya.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very thankful for all of them. They've all been great to give me opportunities, and it's been a good start to the year so far.
Well, and a good start to the career. Gage Holmes, everybody. And Gage, let's get people following you as well on Twitter, because I did see that a Gage Holmes jock is the way you follow a Gage.
I'm still figuring out how to use Twitter, so I'm not super active on there. I have figured out how to like and retweet things, but I'll get more versed as we go along, I'm sure.
Well, you'll also get more experience as you know, people find you and congratulate you on wins and that kind of thing. Gage Holmes, jock. Gage, continued success. Stay safe. Look forward to seeing you in person along the way.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you today.
Pleasure for us to introduce you to horse players and to fans and stakeholders. Gage Holmes from rural Pennsylvania, off to Penn State, started grooming horses at Presque Isle, and just the bug got repeatedly bit by the bug. And next thing you know, she is a bug. 10 pounds, 7 pounds, 5 pounds, now a stake winner as well. And clearly she, if you look at this one particular horse from Sunday, so we'll have to get Jeff Mulcahy too, because it's a great story for him. But she obviously, you know, gets horses to run for, and she's got 24 wins. She's winning 10%, 11%. Let me see. Her total stats. Yeah, over that. She's winning even more. She's winning 15%. 29 wins from 204 starts thus far this year. 200. Oh, that's okay. That's what. That's where the number was. She won with her third start of the year. She had gone 0-6 last year getting going, but she's doing great. This is a nice story. Henrietta Topham, the filly, and in fact, Andy is going to join us next, Andy Serling. And as Casey reaches for Andy, I want to look up this mare, because this is gotta be a pretty old pedigree. Miss Silver Miss Silver Brook. There she is. She was, she's 16 herself. And, well, now this is really strange. She did not, so she was, must have been on the racetrack. This was only her third foal, and there hasn't been one since. This is intriguing. She had three foals, a 14, a 15, and an 18, Twirling Candy, Broken Vow, and Lemon Drop Kid. Interesting. And she herself made $130,000, two-time winner, 21 starts. And actually, her dam, Brookdale, a Turcoman mare. Wow, this is an interesting family. Huh. You never. That's why this game is fascinating. So, all right. Well, Casey's letting me know that I'm going to make the call because the crazy phone company there is down by his neighborhood. So. I will reach Andy and Popo myself. So we'll close out the morning, okay? Let me let Andy know that I'm going to call. And then later I'm going to figure out a little something more about this. I'll see who this, see what more I can find out about this family. Because this just seems like an unusual... storyline. Miss Silver Brook was bred also by the dam was bred by the family, by Cambus Kenneth, and Eric Reed trained her. How about that? Isn't that funny? And the second dam, Brookdale, also there. So this is a third generation. Let's see if it's fourth. Nope, three generations that this family, that this owner, the Cambus Kenneth, the owner breeder people, produce this stake winner. So congratulations to them. What a nice story. Trainer, owner, breeder, jockey, all. With their first stake wins. Andy Serling, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm all right. Second.
I hear that.
No complaints. We obviously got the 2 days of the sale to kind of keep people occupied for 48 hours between the weekend and Wednesday.
There's nothing else to keep people occupied?
Well... Yeah, you know, if they're looking for something to do, the sale always a viable option.
Okay, how often do you go? I'm just curious.
I usually go to one of the 2 days for both of the sales.
Okay. I didn't go last night.
No.
No. But I think I might go tonight.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll look for you tonight. Let's talk. I know we've got basically a half segment to do, but let's get into the weekend, Andy. First and foremost, let's talk Whitney. And, you know, there were a couple of different scenarios, and I guess scenario A kind of played out.
You mean the best horse winning?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's been way too much. And it was just a my show, in my opinion, coverage about the quote deep track, this supposed deep and tiring track. I don't know. They all look tiring to me. Looks tiring to me getting on the stairs in the morning. The track, whatever it may or may not be, is favorable to speed horses, as dirt tracks are. I don't think it's as favorable this year as it was last year. It seems like closers are getting the race more, which probably means that the kickback isn't as severe as it was last year. It's the best guess I can come up with, given that speed did as well as it did, especially in two-turn races, and the figures for speed horses weren't higher than you would have expected them to be. It's usually an indication that, that closers are being somewhat compromised. So I think the track, you know, people are talking about the track. I think it detracts from the conversation. The track is favorable to a horse like Life is Good, and his running style makes him very tough. They rode him well. They didn't, you know, harness his speed. They let him roll along. If guys wanted to keep up with him, they had to run a little bit to keep up with him. So he's a very, very good horse. I was happy to see that Todd is talking about running him back to the Woodward, which will now be two turns because they're running it at Aqueduct. And I'm looking forward to that. He's a really good horse. I don't see any reason to say otherwise. And, you know, I understand that the conversation is very much centered around Flight Line. And I think some of the Flight Line hype is because he never runs, you know, or rarely runs. And I'm not, as you know, I think he's a tremendous horse. And wasn't surprised that he was so dominating in the Met. But the truth is that Life is Good has gone out and done it repeatedly. And, you know, Flight Line has not. So we'll see what Flight Line does in the Pacific Classic. But if there's anybody that got shut out at getting 2-1 on Flight Line in the Breeders' Cup Classic futures, find me the track. You can get 5-2 from me for all you want. I'm just wondering if he wins the Classic and he's going to go, well, what's the shortest price he could be in the Classic? 8-5, 2-1?
Yeah.
5-2.
Yeah.
I don't understand. It's pretty good horses around, and I'm not disputing Flight Line's obvious talent, but I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that it's a little bit uncertain whether we'll see him in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and some things have to happen. But then, Life is Good to me is absolutely one of the clubhouse leaders going to the Breeders' Cup, and surely the mile and quarter is a question given what happened in Dubai. And I'm not to deny that would be foolish. It's a very good horse, though, and I thought his Whitney was decisive, and you know, he's, if not the leader going to the Breeders' Cup Classic right now, I think he has to be considered probably the favorite, not the favorite, very close.
Hey, Andy, what do you recommend? What do you suggest for players where we have...
They should listen to take a little 5-2 from me on the...
But in terms of interpreting these performances and... You know, understanding that, you know, it's coming against a limited of variety of pressure, you know, meaning enough horses to really give an honest, you know, an honest telling of you know, how a horse is going
to
react.
What are you trying to ask me? I'm totally confused by what you're saying.
When we're getting these are great horses. A lot of the best horses.
They're not great. They're not great horses.
Well, okay. You know what I mean.
They're good horses. What are you asking me? Can you keep it a sentence?
I'm trying to frame
it. It's just too long a meet for me to have to decipher this whatever diatribe of yours.
It's not a diatribe. I'm asking if these smallish fields in races like this. What is valuable knowledge? I mean, what did we learn about him, and what do you project when there's a 10-12 horse field? And I just it's nice to see these kinds of performances, Jackie's Warrior last week, etc. But if it's coming against these limited field size, what do we say about them? What do we learn?
That Life is Good is a good horse, and he ran really well in the Whitney. I mean, every race is a different puzzle, right? Some races there's other speeds, and obviously, you know, one of the questions we face towards like Flight Line is the speed of Flight Line and how that's going to affect him. And if Flight Line demonstrates the stamina to win the Pacific Classic, then he becomes problematic for Life is Good because he has speed, not because of the size of the field. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, he beat Hot Rod Charlie, who's very good. Now, obviously, Olympiad didn't show up. He's a better horse than that. So I don't think you can, you know, give that a definitive. But
yeah.
I don't know about the field size. I don't think about field size. I just think about who's in the fields and who they, you know, how they rate to affect performance. There's obvious questions about Life is Good at a mile and a quarter if he faces talented horses with utter speed. I'm not making a prediction in the Breeders' Cup Classic now. I don't have to. I have one prediction. I just want to book play line 5-2. Take my lumps if he goes off at 5. Yeah. No, I'm not against play line. No, I don't have any argument that he's right now one of the worst to beat in the Breeders' Cup Classic. But anybody thinks that taking 2-1 on him was a clever move. There's a bridge available in Manhattan.
It was just, yeah, they were talking about, obviously, this first of two Breeders' Cup future wager opportunities. And it really, and when you looked at it afterward and you looked at those final prices, you just sort of thought, you know, was there really any value to be had at all? I mean, sometimes the Derby futures, we can identify.
Well, there probably are outliers that were too high a price. I don't think we have to sit around and make decisions at this point. We can worry about those things when we get to Breeders' Cup. For now, it was a very good performance, a definitive performance, and he's as good, if not the best, older horse in the country. And I would rate him higher than Flightline at this point simply because he's accomplished more. I'm not saying it makes him a better horse, but right. in 2022, Flightline won the Met. This guy has won. Did he win the Saudi Cup? I don't even remember. Won the Pegasus. Did he run the Saudi Cup? That's good. I can't remember.
I don't remember. No, I don't think so. Did he?
I pay attention to that race.
Exactly.
I'll take a look at the PP.
Here, I got it right here, too. While we do that, let's...
He did win the Don in the neighborhood and the Whitney, so... I'm bad calling it the Dons. Somebody needs to remember the Dons.
Exactly. Let's shift to the test before we talk about the turf races. And
I'm surprised we didn't open up the track before the race. I was really surprised that we didn't open the track up. The test. Matteray's a better horse than that. Was it the track that caused her not to run the race? I don't know. The winner was a tough horse to come up with. You know, that's a division. There's some good divisions this year. The 3-year-old filly sprint division is wanting. You know, Wesley's training the winner up to the Breeders' Cup distaff. I guess he figures waiting 3 months to run last is the right move. I don't understand. Why wouldn't you run her somewhere? Not winning the distaff. It could be 20-1 or more of the distaff, right? Why wouldn't you run her somewhere?
It's a fair question.
I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, I respect Leslie Great Eagle. I just don't quite understand why you would wait so long for a horse that's going to be a gigantic price in a race. That'd be an unreasonable question, right?
No, it's not, actually. No. Let's turn to the two 3-year-old races. I had Nick Luck yesterday, Andy, and we talked about this Godolphin powerhouse and Nation's Pride. If they ran that Belmont Derby, you know, a few more times, he probably wins the majority of them in retrospect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, it's an exceptionally weak group. I'm not trying to be mean.
Yeah.
But this is. I enjoy these races, as you know. But I do think it's a reasonable question for us to ask if million-dollar purses for these 3-year-old turf races. I mean, listen, I don't want to judge it on 1 year. The horse who won the Sarajevo Derby last year has gone to win the Cox Plate, the Prix Ganay, and the Prince of Wales, three of the biggest races in the world. So clearly there was some talent last year. I don't think that Nation's Pride is going on and winning a series of great group ones overseas. I could be wrong. I didn't think that State of Rest would either. But I don't want to confuse him. I mean, as lousy as his trip was on back at Belmont, his trip was very good on Saturday. And these are okay horses. I don't think Annapolis really appreciated the extra distance. He ran fine. Classic Causeway, you know, showed his last race wasn't a total fluke, and he ran fine. But at this point, this is a very moderate group of 3-year colts. And as far as the fillies, while the Belmont Oaks came a really fun big field as the Belmont Derby, another five-horse field, and we've had nothing but small fields for these Cerrito Oaks, $700,000. We're putting up the money, but we're not getting the horses. And I don't think it's unreasonable for us. I mean, I love our racing, and I'll support it forever, but I don't think it's unreasonable to ask, what are we doing here? And then we're going to run these mile and a half and mile and three-eighths races, which clearly cater to Europeans. We'll see how it works out. I saw that he didn't feel like the Moonlight would come back. I saw you're talking about running her in the Lake Placid in a couple weeks. We'll see how they come back at Belmont. But I enjoy them, but are they really, is it really working?
It's a fair question.
I ask the questions of other tracks. I need to ask them of us too. And I enjoy them. Don't get me wrong. I like them. But whether I like them or not is an incidental question. And I think the Cerro Oaks is continuously coming up. It's a disappointing race, right?
Yeah.
So I was disappointed in those races, to be honest, this year. I thought the ones at Belmont worked very well. I don't think these have worked. I mean, Cerro Derby this was a weak running of it. And it was an okay race this year, but it was a relatively weak running. Cerro Oaks is just not working. Can't be working to put up $700,000 and get five or six every year. Just can't be.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how. I'm sure things like this are evaluated after every season.
I'm not involved in that discussion, and I'll support us the bitter end. But I do think it's fair to ask these questions.
Well, Nation's Pride with the Moonlight, both decisive.
Moonlight, like a nice horse, Yeah. I'm not trying to knock her. I bet her in the Belmont Oaks, but she also got a very soft trip, sitting on again over an overmatched horse in a slow pace. And when you come home in 16 and change, and the final 7/16ths and 38 and change or something, or low 39, nobody's closing against Jibble. I thought the Pulitzer ran fine to be second, but I just, I didn't think these. I thought that was a disappointing race, just as in the bigger scheme of things. The race that was interesting on Sunday were those maidens, where we saw the E5 horse win. I'm wondering if they put a fig up for that race yet. I don't think they had last I looked, right? It happened yesterday when I looked. Let me take a look right now.
Yeah, I had stopped looking at. Is there a number for the Derby yet?
Not. I'll look now too. Let me look at Sunday though for the sixth race, because that was. There's no, to me, Pink Hue won that race. Now they haven't put up a fig. Is the best 2-year-old filly or colt I've seen on the turf going long so far. And I think Zajera, who ran second, the first for Phil Bauer, ran terrific.
We're very well.
And Delight didn't get the best of trips in there to run third. I thought that was a very, very strong race. Came up seemingly quick. I'll see if, I think the Oaks got around a, an 89 or something. Does that sound right?
Oak, actually, yeah.
No, 92.
Yeah, 92 is right. And the boys' race does not have a fig yet.
Right. They're figuring out the timing of it. Obviously, most of the time is inaccurate.
Well, and since you brought up the maiden race, I suppose we should juxtapose the long on the turf of Pink U, the fillies, with the boys going 7/8 on Saturday, Disarm, a big winner, but everybody was talking about the way Croupy was coming the last eighth of a mile.
He's definitely going to burn a lot of people's money next time. I can see him at 2-5 next time. No, he obviously was. He was flying in the stretch, Croupy. And, wasn't the word that the other half of the entry was the better one?
I didn't play that.
The conversation I heard from numerous people was the other half was the better one.
That's interesting.
Their half never got out of the gallop. That's not to say it was the first-time star that for whatever reason didn't run and won't run better second time. But Croupy was rolling, but I don't think that should take away from what Disarm did. Because the interesting thing about Disarm was he watched his first race at Churchill. He didn't break. He's a gun runner going, five that day? He didn't break. He was extraordinarily green down the stretch, and I thought he ran very well considering the circumstances. It wasn't a fast race, but his performance inside of the race was good. And he Cincinnati was a completely different horse on Saturday. He was totally professional. He put himself into the race early, stalked the horse. He got a very good trip, but he really was a completely different horse for Steve, the second start. He got an 86 fire, and he's a gun runner, another gun runner, right? He's a, just yes. feels like a muscle horse that's going to be, you know, a player down the road. I don't know what there is to not like about his performance.
No, so, agree. Yeah, agree.
I think we'll hear from him again. You know, I imagine he's heading toward the hopeful. Why wouldn't he?
Actually, Steve said yesterday with us that it's the Iroquois for him.
Oh, okay. He wants to go two turns.
Yes, he does. Yeah, he does.
Okay.
Yeah.
He must, I'm sure he, well, he's running that horse Gunport in the special. Maybe he's going to do the same thing with Jackie's Warrior.
A possibility. Well, that race is going to be, you know, scrutinized undoubtedly. The other Pletcher, the entry mate, was Point Proven, was the other one with Croupy. I mean, you have to know that that if they're naming a horse after J.J. Croupy,
I understand. I do, but all the conversation was about the one.
Interesting.
I'm not saying it's absolutely correct, but I'm just telling you the conversation was about that horse.
You know what else, Andy? The race that hasn't gotten enough attention just because of the kind of day Whitney Day is, was the important group in the middle of everything there. That 7 furlong, the 3-year-olds, that Money Supply, Saint Tappet, and Osborne.
I wouldn't mention Money Supply first. I would mention Saint Tappet and the rest of them. Yeah, it's unfortunate it was run over a sealed track.
Yeah.
I think he got a 90 after getting a 93 buyer in his first start.
Correct.
No, he's a good horse, St. Tappet. You know, I imagine Todd will be looking towards stakes with him going forward. But, you know, he delivered well in his second start. I agree. Look, he was terrific. You know, this is a horse who ran faster than Accretive did in debut, and you saw well Accretive ran the Amsterdam. Now Accretive seemed to have moved forward more in his second start than St. Tappet did, but that's not to say that St. Tappet won't take another step forward. So, and it's nice to see a foal from Howard Gross do so well. You know, such a good horse.
Well, this is part of Mandy Pope, who, you know, that seemed like, you know, her investments were kind of spinning their wheels, and then all of a sudden she's spitting winners out with alacrity. Charge It, of course, you know, the biggest of the recent successes, but this horse on his heels, and it is 3 weeks. They will have 3 weeks rest if they want to consider the Jerkins.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Doesn't feel like that's what they'll be doing, but I suppose it's always possible.
You know, see how he does, right?
Great one. Yeah.
Conaher is coming. Conaher's he's confirmed. Off of his prep stake win last Monday at down at Colonial. Andy Serling with us. And Andy, before we ask about anything coming up, let me can I field the non-DQ from Wednesday with you and you know, some of the frustrations. What are your thoughts on this situation? I mean, I know we bring it up every, you know, fairly periodically.
Yeah, I have no idea. We're talking about the race with the 9 ran second.
Yes, yes, exactly.
It was not a call I agree with. And it seems surprising that one didn't come down, and they took the one down the turf. I know there's a little bit of contact, but it wasn't nearly as bad. I'm not saying the one on the turf shouldn't have come down next day or the day after, but it did seem like a much more nominal contact than what we saw on that day. But I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what. It's ground that doesn't need to be covered.
Yeah, the concerns over the herding, they just don't go away. It just never.
Yeah, I know. But we've had this conversation so many times.
I know. Yeah. It's maddening. I should mention, I gave it out as just a note earlier in the show, but I can bring it up with you. Dave Grenick kind of doing a first half business summary on Sunday night.
Yeah, that's a conversation you should have with Pat McKenna.
There you go. I can do that. That's true. Introducing the second half, a very strong first half. And in terms of stats, Arad Ortiz leading rider, and right now Chad with a huge day the other day and a great weekend, four win day on Sunday. He's got 21 wins, so we're you know what, there is one jock note that Dave picked up on, that Joel Rosario poised to set a graded stake victory mark at Saratoga. He's got 10 graded stake wins in the first half of the meet, and the record is 11. Johnny and Javier.
Yeah, figures to beat that.
Yeah. So it's Andy, it's been a great first half of the season.
No, it's been terrific racing. You know, I mean, it's been hot. That's the thing. But we've had a minimal amount of rain, so we haven't lost turf racing, and the racing has been as strong as we'd hoped it would be. It's been terrific so far, and I hope it continues. You know, I mean, I think, you know, there's not a lot you can say except thanks to, you know, our customers and fans that keep betting their money. And, you know, I think they're supporting us, obviously, in a big way. We're up, I think around 8% so far, day short of half of the meet. Yeah, we have to be very happy about Scott. I don't think it was unrealistic to think that, you know, there could be some that didn't necessarily have to move forward after last year's big numbers. But it's great to see the fan response. And it's just a tribute to how, you know, how strong our customers are. And they're supporting us in this way. And I appreciate it a great deal. It enables me to have a job.
We should also mention, I have not heard if the brunch is sold out next Wednesday.
I haven't either.
I did see Nick Karras the other day, so I will get that answer tomorrow on track. But Andy, of course, next Wednesday, the 17th, being honored by the Racetrack Chaplaincy for his incredibly generous and long-running support of the efforts of the Backstretch Assistance Team. And it'll be a very fun morning, Andy, on Wednesday.
Thanks. I hope so. Yeah. Well, I'm greatly honored. I am. It means a lot to me. I really do appreciate it.
Well, and
I'm deserving, but I think it's a very deserving cause. You know, it's because of the people who are in the Backstretch that people like me have a job. There's much more to say to that, you know.
Before we go, tomorrow, you got anything that we should be aware of on the Wednesday slate?
Let me find tomorrow's. I'm kind of working on Friday.
That's tomorrow. A big full tomorrow. Fields tomorrow.
Anybody? What I really like? I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody I really like. It's hard to know without, you know, seeing the prices and seeing where things end up. I have some sort of goofy picks of prices in some races.
That's what we want.
Yeah. No, I found the card interesting but tough. Yeah, well, we'll go through and talk more tomorrow. I haven't really finished all my ideas.
All right.
I'm sorry.
They're not at all.
I'm not sure what I'm doing here.
Well, they're, just for people that haven't looked ahead yet, there's...
It's an excellent car.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's tough. I think there's a lot of opportunities. Hopefully it works out. The cards this week are all good. They all look really interesting. So looking forward to it as we head to Four Star Dave.
Andy, I appreciate it. We will
Thanks,
see
Steve.
You. Probably see you tonight or tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Andy Serling, everybody. And the second half of the meet. We got 21 cards left. And in fact, this card tomorrow, one thing I have not had a chance to discuss, because you know it's my favorite angle. And, I'm involved with Capital OTB. I've got that DePaula play of the day. Well, last summer, I went to town on my favorite Saratoga angle, not just Saratoga, but, you know, New York racing angle in general, which is New York Breds long on the grass. Well, through the first half of the meet, there's only been six of them. Actually, seven now, if you count the maiden special from the other day. But there's been way less of them than normal. There's been they've been utilizing the sprints, the turf sprints, a little bit too much, at least, you know, for my preference. But there is tomorrow a conditional allowance going as the ninth. and they're going to go a mile on the inner turf. These are New York breds, and this is, you know, this is what you want. You got a 7-2 favorite. This is the Pletcher Frontline Dancer, Timbuktu for Brad Cox. The 11 horse is on the outside. He's second choice, 4-1. Then you got Frank's Art, but then it starts to careen, you know, up into the 8-1 range, 10-1, 12-1. These are the most garish opportunities in New York. New York breds, male or female, long on the grass. There is literally, on a going basis, no more than a couple of lengths separating the morning line favorite from the seventh choice. And I kid you not, it is a grab bag. And not to say that favorites don't win, because they, you know, they do. But to give you an example, those first six races, not including the maiden race, and I think the maiden race winner on Sunday, I think was what, seven, was it 7-2? 7-2, I think. But the average price in those six races, 6-1. So $14 winners on average with those six races. I think we had two favorites. But it on a regular basis. And in fact, even that race, I'm going to pull it out. Where is it? With Action Jackson, right? And Action Jackson took crazy money on Saturday. Yeah, there it is. This is the race where Conquest, who I would have killed myself if I had Conquest. I came very close to picking Conquest, and then I went in a different direction. I thought that seasonal debut of Sir John from Mott, I thought was maybe interesting and live. Didn't run bad. Attended the pace and then kind of dropped anchor and ended up six, beaten, I don't know, five lengths. But Conquest was 20-1, led most of the race and got overhauled late, then was ultimately DQ'd and put back behind Curlin's Wisdom. But okay, the second choice did win at 7-2, Action Jackson. But you had a 20-1 second, a 20-1 third, and an 8-1 fourth. So even when one of the favorites wins, the rest of the exotics are absolutely, you know, generous and bulbous. And by the way, speaking of meet leaders, congratulations to the Goichmans, Larry Goichman. And it's funny, Action Jackson is a son of Goichman's wonderful J-Ray. Remember J-Ray? Todd Pletcher trained. This was one of Goichman's first really good horses. She was a terror in state bred company for her whole career. But she actually, as a broodmare, I'm sure if you asked Larry directly, I think she's been modest and is not, I don't think she's come close to reproducing herself, certainly. And here, I'm going to even tell you. But I was happy for them to get a Saratoga win with one of J-Ray's, not terrible, a little better than maybe I remembered. General Jack, actually, a stake winner out of J-Ray. And Kundre, a distorted humor filly, going back to 2013, had been pretty successful. Three-time winner, $150,000. And there's a behind Action Jackson. There's a unnamed Quality Road, who's a three-year-old. So it feels like that one might not be able to get to the races. It's a colt. There's an Arrogate two-year-old, Rodin. J-Ray was barren in 21, and this year she delivered an Oscar performance colt. You know, it's funny. This is something to ask Sid. She had two boys, then she had three girls, and now subsequently she's had five straight boys. She has this Arrogate colt coming and an Oscar performance by her side. So, J. Ray. And she's had two solid performers. And actually, that Kundre, I think now herself is a broodmare. Yeah, she's got a two-year-old by Go Sapper. She's been nicely covered. She's got a Go Sapper two-year-old. She's got a Go Sapper weanling. And in between, an Into Mischief colt. The second Go Sapper is a filly. All right. So so the Goichmans have, I think, three wins at the meet. There was another. They had a two-year-old winner as well. So, all right. Let me get Papo in here, and I'm just remembering that I have to do the calling. I'm yapping away, pretending that Casey's going to tell me that Papo's on the line. He's not going to do that. I have to do that myself. So happy to get a chance to talk to the still newly wedded Papo Morales. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. How is the first month here of Wedded Bliss?
Oh, outstanding. It's everything I thought it was going to be and better. So it's been great. And she, Melissa, surprised me last week. It was a birthday weekend, and she had surprised me with a trip out to Red River Gorge. She got a cabin out there. So we spent the weekend out there hiking every day and made it up to the Natural Bridge and just had a really good time.
I love it. I love it. Well, it's good to catch up with you, and I'm glad I did because you let me know that you've been killing it at Colonial yesterday. 6-for-8 with form to win suggestions, and we've got this carryover, so I want to get a couple of form to win snapshots, and we'll put them up on Twitter as well. But there's also, before we do that, we've got can I say exciting news?
Oh, yeah, it's very exciting, Steve. Yeah, so Form to Win is now live inside of Amwager. So any Amwager user can click on the Form to Win button and pull up the app and actually handicap within Amwager, highlight their horses in Form to Win. You go back to the wager pad, and your hub horses are also highlighted. So it quickly identify the horses that you liked in Form to Win, and you can bet them directly through All In Amwager now, which is really exciting. We haven't advertised it yet. We'll probably start that this weekend, so it's kind of like a soft launch. The new Form to Win website should be done by Thursday, and I'm working on tutorials that will be embedded into Form to Win. There's a little horse with a graduation cap on the right-hand corner. You click on that while you're inside the app, and it gives you a kind of like a little explanation of what you're looking at within the app itself.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, it's very exciting, Steve. And Form to Win, before we talk about Colonial, it's Colonial yesterday, although I did have winners. The highest price winner that I have is like $12. But that horse that paid, that True Adka, I went back and looked, had the best Form to Win figure. So if you just would have sorted by best time, you could have landed on that horse. I didn't, unfortunately. But you could have absolutely had the horse. But at Del Mar this past weekend, I went looking for prices, and top horse was Blue Stripe, and that Clement Hirsch, who I want to follow that horse. That horse is interesting. That dam, Blues for Sale, was also the dam of Blue Prize.
Yes.
That grade one winner, Blue Prize. And I don't know, you know, this staff's going to be a tough race this year, but Blue Prize loved Keeneland. So maybe Blue Stripe at a big price underneath in the distaff. You never know. So I'll continue to follow her. And then in the California Dreamin' Stakes, Carmelita's Man was ranked number one on Form to Win. But more importantly, Steve, Bang for Your Buck, who went off at 23-1, was ranked second. And that exacta paid $56 for a buck.
Nice.
And then in the CTVA Stakes at Del Mar, Chimosa was ranked number one. Shed of Cash was ranked two, so it had the cold exacta, and that returned $35.30 for a dollar. So continues to produce, Steve.
I love it. And now easier than ever. And so Amwager users, right in. And boy, with this, added layer, I see the new logo, the new Amwager logo.
Yeah, new logo. We've done been working on lots of things, Steve. New logo with the M Wager. We haven't announced that yet. We're kind of trying to roll this all out at the same time. But yeah, the new logo is live. And we're also, I should have it done by the end of the week. I'm working with our programmers now. I'm going to be putting my form to win selections. If you're an AM Wager user, you will see who I lock on form to win for these big races that I look at. It'll be denoted on there with a French bulldog face. So anytime you see a French bulldog face next to a particular horse, that's a horse that I identified using form to win. So just another added layer. Kind of gamifying the betting experience. And, you know, you have the ability to turn it off. You know, if some people don't want to see it, they'll have the ability to turn that off. But just another way to help our bettors, you know, succeed, hopefully. And hopefully I can find some nice price winners for them.
I without a doubt. And tell everybody the name of the adorable French bulldog that you occasionally put up on used
to. Mocha.
That's right.
Yeah, I've had two. I had Echo, which was her uncle, and now I've got Mocha. So she comes to the office with me every day. She's old rides in the front seat of my car, and she's living the life, Steve.
I love it. Well, even though the much missed Papacore One account is no longer out there, providing daily inspirations, maybe the M Wager or Form to Win account could put the face to the logo, to the French bully logo, so people can see Mocha for themselves.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Steve. We'll definitely consider that. Listen, I mean, she's definitely more popular than me, so we'll just roll with her.
Well, amwager.com, and it's a new look. There's a lot going on, and it's not even close to finished yet. It continues to have all kinds of things working toward kind of a next level interface for players, including having form to win ingrained essentially in the experience and in the interface. Let's interface with a couple of Colonial picks. I'm going to make my final determinations and put the play up in a little bit. 405, by the way, everybody, on this carryover sequence that starts in race 6.
Yeah, I think this is a tough sequence. These maiden claimers, several in this series of races. But I'll just give you the numbers that I identified quickly using form to win. And then you can see if they line up with the horses that you also like. So in race 6, the 11, the 5, the 1, and the 14 were the horses I would be interested in that were the top ranked using form to win.
Amazing.
In race 7, oh, I like the 3, the 1, and the 4.
That's interesting.
And the 3 was a little bit interesting. I went back and looked, because, you know, 8-1 on the morning, 8-1 on the morning line. I don't know how she fits, but, limited start, so we don't have a big data set.
Exactly.
These young 2-year-olds, but, just going off one race, she fit. Race 8, 4-2-7, Steve. Clint Maroon, Uncle Armando, and Strong Headed were the top ranked on form to win. Race 9, the 5-9-8, Smile Brian. Was the 9 scratched? Steve?
I have not gone back yet to see the final. I'll check now, actually.
I think the 9 may be scratched. We've actually got scratches built into the platform now, too, and form to win.
Oh,
so
nice.
It looks like the 9 may be coming out.
Hold on. I got it right now. Hold on. Here we go. Yeah, the 9 and the 10 came out.
Okay, so 5-8, and then let's see if I can give you one more. This is the Mama 16th. So, sport. The 3, City Plan, would be next up.
5-8.
On,
right. All right.
On form to win. And then race 10, Steve. 5-2-11.
This is tough. The first leg and the last leg are just murder. It's interesting though that the five that Justin's Quest, that was one of was Tijuana Brass was the price that Marcus liked. Interesting that and I have not done the charting yet on Form to Win myself, but I landed on the 11 too. Can you do the twist? This is the Arch Kingsley that has mostly been jumping, and if she runs back to that race from last summer at Colonial, that's the best race anybody in this field has run. So she's got flat experience. The five makes some sense. That Stepstones, you know, Kelsey Danner's got two in there. She's also got Wi-Fi. Stepstones is the shorter of the two prices. I know Marcus liked Wi-Fi. Sewanee Chick, absolutely, on the rail, is one of the ones. And then Beastie Girl, who's 4-1, but got to work out a trip from the... Now it's the 13 hole. There is one horse that scratched out of here. The two is out. Queen of Class. So you're still going with a field of 13.
Yeah, call your friends. Check it together.
I love it. Papa will check in. On Friday as we look to the 4-star Dave and action anywhere around the country.
Is Rigo Glory coming back in that? She running in that,
yes,
4-star day?
Yes.
Yeah, she's a beast. See,
well,
that horse is. That's a legitimate. I don't care, male, female. She's a monster.
Well, Casa Creed, it's basically Casa Creed, two-time winner of the Jiper against Regal Glory, multiple grade one winner, trying to pull off kind of a Got Stormy in the 4-star Dave on Saturday. Excellent. Papo, I appreciate it. Form to Win and AM Wager, everybody, and now integrated and, you know, open an account if you haven't, and they got a good offer available too, matching, and check out AM Wager, and we'll talk more as these features and benefits are added.
Yeah, best of luck today, Steve.
You too, Papo Morales, everybody, and there you go. There's the Tuesday get together, Papo and Andy. This hour, a fun conversation with Gage Holmes, the bug girl that now has moved on and become a stake winner, in addition to the wins that she's piling up. Marcus Hirsch, who gave us a help with Colonial, Mark Cassie, and Jessica Martini on the sale. Day two, night two of the sale, and back with you live from the racetrack tomorrow at the races. Replay 6 to 9, archive podcast a little bit later when Case does the post-production. And we'll talk to you in the morning. Good luck, everybody.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.